Good morning, good evening, good afternoon for those who are watching. Welcome to a special edition of Let's Humanize the Workplace, where I am going to have a conversation with Mary Jane Roy, my dear friend Mary Jane Roy. And we are discussing about topics that are related to Go to Thrive, right? Thriving workplace is everything that's needed right now. And thriving is also the, let's say, the equivalent of creating a high performance workplace where everybody is bringing their best selves and showing up themselves as well. I am Vivian Acqua. I'm a certified inclusion strategist. And what I do is I support companies with dismantling barriers that can hinder high performance, that can hinder inclusion as well, and anything related to that, and been supported of so many companies as well. So please connect with me or have a look on my LinkedIn, see what I write about, but also how I can support you and your team or your managers to win and create a thriving team or create a thriving workplace as well, because it's so much needed, especially now with the workforce having their demands. I don't see it as demand. I see it as nice to haves and also necessary to have these demands as well, necessary to have these ingredients as well to amplify inclusion, right? So I want to hand the mic over to Mary Jane Roy because she can introduce herself bestly. So Mary Jane.
Thanks, Vivian. Thank you. Hi, everyone. Yeah, Mary Jane Roy. My company is Creating Waves. And I have a specialty and my expertise lies in sharing within the corporate world for employees how to navigate stressful situations, which we all come across, and building personal resilience. So those are my two main areas. Vivian and I know each other now, I think 6 or 7 years. And
seven. I think it's longer.
and we've also, in the last few years, started to work together as well in the areas of DEI, inclusion, diversity and equity. So that's me in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. And also I'm looking at my desk and I have an amazing calendar by Danielle Beaufort. She has a really awesome Instagram account, even though don't look at the date, but I wanted to share this image with you, right? So it's the act of true love. I see you, I'm here for you. Showing empathy and connecting with others are walking through rough seasons. Who can help you feel seen today? I wanted to share this as well, because these are daily quotes that I can grab from my desk. And there are some that I can keep, but I wanted to share this because of the topic that we are discussing. And also, how can we show up at work and really support people with their well-being as well? So to dive into the conversation, I wanted to unravel it a little bit, because a while ago we came across a HBR article and it was about care washing. And like Mary Jane, oftentimes we have these conversations behind the scenes, like on our WhatsApp. It's like, oh, this is a good topic to have a conversation about. And just so you know, that too many organizations hide behind service level well-being initiatives. So they provide yoga classes, they provide mindful training whilst continuing the unhealthy work standard, like, you know, working 9 to 9 or work hard, play hard. Don't believe in that at all, because work hard, play hard results into a burnout. But that's more of that Mary Jane can share more about that. And also, we have to be mindful that we don't advertise, or you don't advertise as a company, you don't advertise with, you can do yoga, you can do this, you can do that. But people not having the time to work on themselves with their well-being, right? So care washing, we'll dive into care washing, we'll dissect the definition of care washing and other. Are there like washing that is related to diversity, equity, and inclusion that can hurt your organization, that can hurt your team performance as well, instead of thinking that, you know, tokenizing a word or tokenizing a topic or a theme can help you move forward and attract people as well? Anything to add, Mary Jane?
Well, I think we just had this conversation. Shall I start off with the the differences that we approached the care washing. So it is a term that has come in greenwashing, care washing, rainbow washing, pink washing. We're seeing a lot of it, but whitewashing, mm-hmm. where the definition that I was approaching this all from, covering up or putting a misleading spin on a situation. And so that was my basic premise. But Vivian, I was really fascinated to hear you share what your concept of whitewashing is.
I'm not saying that your concept is wrong, because there are, no. you know, there are, for one word or for one definition, there are multiple layers of a definition, right? But the way that I've come across this word or this terminology, whitewashing, it's connected to the civil rights. It's connected to people portraying themselves in a good light, in a good sentiment, whilst Black people are hurting, right? Let's say that when you look at the current climate, what's happening in the US, there's a lot of whitewashing being done. Things are being edited where people of color are not mattering at all. So that's how, that's an example of how I see whitewashing. So when Mary Jane brought it up this morning, I was just like, okay, Mary Jane, I'm not really comfortable with addressing it during this conversation, however, or typing it as a word. However, I do feel like there's a need, and it's important to talk about the things that we don't want to address, or the things that we need to address but are challenging to address. Right? So that's why we are bringing different perspectives in regarding this terminology, so that you can understand there are different ways that people look towards this terminology as well. So I want to bring up the care washing. So it was this screen that I brought up, and then Mary Jane said, well, what about whitewashing? And that's where the conversation started. Conversation, not a discussion, not a debate. Mm-mm. I always talk from a dialogue perspective. So care washing is a term that is used to describe the superficial promotion of employee well-being by organizations without any genuine commitment to it, right? So as an example, what I shared before, like promising all the different benefits, but not, you know, creating time and space for people within the calendar to make use of that practice, right? To make use of a trainer or to go to therapy or whatever is needed that your company is offering. Do you have another example, maybe, Mary Jane?
Yeah, I think it's one that we've talked about before as well, is the fact of the one-offs, you know?
The one-night stand things.
The one-off stands, yeah. And by that I mean a trainer gets hired in with the expertise, say, that I have in terms of learning tools and tips on navigating stress better in your lives. Then it's a one-off, you know.
Yeah.
1.5, 2.5, 3.5 hour workshop, and then people are expected to go away and embed it in practical ways in their personal and professional lives. This is such a narrow view of what's needed for employee well-being. And I think all of the employee well-being, and I think this is one of the things where the article, the HBR article, Vivian, highlighted, is that employee well-being is so closely tied to a performance of an organization.
Exactly.
And so short-sighted.
Exactly. And that's why I just wanted to bring these figures up, right? Because recently Gallup came up with the state of the workplace. And this is a yearly activity that Gallup does, is take all the surveys from the whole world, all the different organizations, and put them into one report. And it's important to highlight, you know, what happened in 2023, or the figures of 2023 and the figures of recent, right? So actively disengaged, 17% versus 18% previously. Thriving workplace, or people thriving at work, 21% and versus 23%. So that figure has lowered. And where are all those people? Well, it went to quiet quitting, whereas people show up in the workplace, they show up between 9 to 5, they do the bare minimum, don't go, you know, the extra end, but also their energy can be slightly contagious towards other people, going towards the presenteeism as well. So it's called quiet quitting, or you can see it as presenteeism, as people showing up, not really wanting to be there, but they know they have to be there because they need an income, etc.
Yeah. And I do know that the word presenteeism, it's one that I've used for years prior to quiet quitting coming on the scene. That presenteeism officially in the HR world was seen as somebody showing up who has a chronic illness. However, I extended it into being that they're there, but they're not engaged. They're not fully engaged as they can be, and they're not actively disengaged. And the cost of presenteeism on that basis alone, not even looking at the chronic illness of employees, but the cost of presenteeism is far greater than absenteeism due to ill health. And again, it's that close ties, that how closely aligned well-being is to an organizational's performance. And it's something that really does need to be addressed. They for some reason they're ignoring these numbers, Vivian.
It's ignoring, but also we have to also put ourselves in the spaces and minds of what leaders have to deal with at the moment right now, right? It's not only about the internal challenges that they are dealing, it's also external challenges, whereas maybe a president from a certain country is saying something and it's impacting the whole world, right? Or maybe their CEO or their company is retracting from DEI, which it, in the end, it won't favor them, right? Look at what's happening as Target, but also look at what's happening to the deals that are being ignored or not being made when you look into what the rest of Europe is thinking about diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? So there is a lot that leaders are currently handling. And I would say that it's a very important to have an individual conversation, but also have a support mechanism for leaders so that they can recharge and charge themselves and recharge. It also reminds me, this conversation reminds me of a recent book presentation that I attended by Adam Kahane, where he talks about resting and recharging and fueling yourselves while you are working between the cracks, right? Adam Kahane has a book coming out, or is out right now, but there is also another book coming out. And I recently shared a post about it on my timeline. So I think it was Friday or Saturday. It's a very good book for every leader to have when you want to create change and create it between the ripple effects, focusing on the ripple effects or the small cracks instead of the bigger effects of bombarding the whole system, which won't work, right? So in a way, Adam Kahane is talking about calling in and using that calling in as a way to navigate into the changes that you want to make or to connect with your audience as well.
I think it's what he's recommending are little micro steps that can, as you mentioned, create, and that's the premise around creating waves is that ultimately those small steps. And you mentioned something that's really important, and especially in these work hard, play hard cultures that are so prevalent. And that is these micro breaks, you know, giving people the chance to 2 or 3 minutes every hour or hour and a half or 2 hours to recharge in some way, whether it be through humor or breathing, abdominal breathing.
Or just stepping away and dance.
A zebra shake or anything, you know. These are ways that we can really support employees by giving people the opportunity to take these breaks, and especially when deadlines are imminent. Again, the ability to, you mentioned in your article, I think it was, Vivian, that athletes don't ever not take the recovery days.
Yeah.
They know that if they don't recover on time, their performance is going to go down. Mm-hmm. Somehow we've lost sight of this within the organizational structures and or systems. And this needs to be changed. I have made a reference to myself. I was looking up the speech of the new Pope and then this article, the link that you sent me to, I can't think of his name now, but it was excellent, excellent reflections on what the Pope had said, but that, you know, we become so entrenched in thinking that the only things that are important, you know, are things like money, technology, power, success.
Yeah.
But what happens to our values? What happens to things like honesty, valuing humanity, integrity, all of these kinds of things. And those are missing in organizations. And I don't think they can survive in the long run because the humans are going to be collapsing. You know, we can only take so much. And it's, I was at a workshop on Friday in Utrecht. One of the women that was there, and she's a Gen Z, but we were talking about generations and generational stereotyping. But she said, I'm not going to work more than 32 hours a week because I saw what it did to my parents and their generation. And, you know, that's not the life I want for myself.
Yeah.
So they're making other choices. And if organizations don't go along with it, again, with the talent shortage, this is...
This is a personal thing to me because the first time that I interned and I was already working for the company part-time, I made a deal that I noticed that working 5 days, 8 hours, 40 hours, I was calculating like, how many days am I going to spend to recover? So I negotiated a way that I will work 3 days intern, 1 day, 2 days intern, 2 days paid, full paid as the previous pay, plus not work 1 day in the week as well. So in total, I would have three days that I'm not working. And this methodology has helped me so much because the first time that I worked 40 hours, I was screaming and running like, no, never, ever. The longest that I've done is work 36 hours, but still within the four days framework because I need a day to recover. Now that I know that I'm neurodivergent, I do understand why I need to recover or I need to have some space in between and interact on a different way. But many people, the Netherlands, you know, has gotten known for us being maybe lazy comparing to other countries, but also women are being labeled like you're working less or you're working less hours are being called lazy. But what about we are working productive and we are still sharing the output that is needed, right? We are doing the work that needs to be done. And sometimes people say you need 40 hours, but what if I can do the work between 32 hours or less?
Yeah. Yeah. It in an ideal world,
In an ideal world, it doesn't always make sense, but I believe in I work to sustain my life and I don't live to work. That's how I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think organizations are just going to have to, there's somewhere a line is going to be drawn and to here and not and no further in my mind, you know, you hit the proverbial brick wall and more, do we have any data on current burnout numbers?
Not really, but before we share data, I want to acknowledge Kira as well. Thank you, Kira, for listening or watching this conversation. It is indeed a very interesting conversation as well. And also realizing that just in the morning, this is a topic outside of the topic, but I realized that I just found out that Financial Times in the Netherlands was sharing that companies are now paying off student loans to attract the young generation. And that's an interesting thing because you're paying the student loans, which is positive. But then I'd also be mindful to invest in their well-being as well, because I don't have the facts for burnout. But what I do have is share the numbers from the Gallup presentation regarding the emotions that are in the workplace at the moment right now, right? So these are emotions, and I would like to hand over the mic to you, Mary Jane, to address the impact of these emotions in the workplace.
Yeah, I mean, I think they speak for themselves, don't they? I mean, really. And yeah, I mean, what can you say? Mm-hmm. If everyone is experiencing, you know, almost half of your employees are experiencing stress on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I mean, and stress, it's not just a word. Stress affects people physiologically. It affects people mentally. It affects people emotionally. Mm-hmm. How the heck if it
hijacks their productivity in a way. You can hijack your brain.
Yeah.
Can hijack, you know, what you're doing, and it can literally cause you to freeze or fawn or fight.
Yeah.
And being in that state the whole time is not effective. Never effective.
No. And even if it was just one stressful moment in the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I tell you, if you remember it and you can record and say, yesterday I felt stressed, then it was obviously impactful. But that is going to affect you physiologically and mentally and emotionally for anywhere from 4 to 6 hours later. All right. Yep. And longer if it was something that you took home with you, that you shared with your partner, that you called your mother about or whatever, you know. Because we have that ability to keep that stressful emotions alive, you know. They can literally hijack us. And if they do that, the wear and tear on our well-being is incredible. Emotions like anger, 21% experience anger on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And loneliness.
And I also would like I also would like to be mindful of what you just shared right now, because maybe people don't understand its impact, right? There is a book out there, it's called The Body Keeps a Score. And when you bring stress home and you don't have a system to beat stress or to mitigate stress or to minimize stress, it will eat you alive, and literally it will be part of your DNA, your code. And I'm also reading another book. I'm reading it in chunks. The book is called It Didn't Start With You, where the stress that you are enduring now is in your DNA code, and it can be registered to not only this generation, but also the future generation, 5 generations as well. And it's been scientifically proved. So those who are saying, is there science? Yes, there is definitely science. The science is shared in the book called It Didn't Start With You, where the author is sharing different sciences. And it's also in the Bible. There is a connection in the Bible saying that whatever is done upon you at the moment right now can reach like 5 generations beyond that as well.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that aspect, Vivian, but I do know that, for example, in pregnancy, a mother who is stressed in during pregnancy, the risk for that infant, that newborn, is much greater. And not just when they're born, but even how they develop and mature. So, it's very strong. And what I do know about stress and DNA is that DNA affects what's called the telomeres. So it affects how DNA expresses itself. You may have a genetic tendency for a certain kind of disease or illness, which would never manifest itself except because of stress, the stress that you experience. So it does affect how DNA expresses itself. And that I know is also a very scientifically validated, fact.
Yeah, so realizing that, but also, you know, the topic that you talk about, right? I found that out in the book, and I heard about stress being parents who are pregnant, who are dealing with stress, that it can impact the baby, you know, in the womb. What I didn't realize is that after the womb, after the period, it can also impact the child at the moment right now, right? So for those who don't know, I face maternal wall bias by being bullied by my then managers, dealing with harshness, so much hardness and harshness and so many other things that I'm now thinking that what have I passed on to my child unwillingly, unknowingly, because of that scenario?
Yeah, but realizing that is the most important thing, because you can give Orlando the care and the guidance and the tools that he needs in order to, if there's something there, to that he can then address them, navigate.
We're working on that now. We're working on that now, because he he's a perfectionist in a way, similar to his mother in a way. And realizing that he wants to score high, or he wants a good score, and putting all that pressure upon himself, his body shut down, his body literally shut down. So we are currently working together with him and his dad and myself, working together to end the day with a conversation and one helpful thought that can rewrite the way that he tackles challenges, right? So yeah, it's a it's a valuable lesson that I can see so many benefits from in the workplace, having a conversation about what well-being measurements or what well-being strategies are you taking, and also learning from each other. So one thing that is definitely in my well-being toolkit is whenever I do a DEI training, doesn't matter what topic it is, some topics might be, you know, challenging, like microaggression, or maybe something like inclusive leadership, depending on the audience as well. Some days the audience is amazing, and on other days I wish that they weren't that challenged, because in the end they understand that this is the way to, this is what they need to do to become inclusive leaders. But it's not always accepted in the way that I hope that we'll accept it. So sometimes there is friction. Sometimes people come up with polarized comments as well. And I know how to deal with that. And I always have, most of the time, I always have a co-facilitator, because two people can see more and two people can do more. But still, it will have an impact on my emotions on that day. So what I do, either I box, so use boxing as a way to break out the sweat, but also boxing like I wanna physically beat down this experience as well. And on the other hand, I regularly visit the sauna. I have an in-home sauna, infrared sauna. I had that already, you know, a few years ago. I am Ghanaian. My blood always is asking for warmth, especially in the winter. And this is my mechanism right now. So I visit like the sauna like 4 or 5 times per week to sweat different emotions out, but also to process my day and leave it at that moment in time, so that next time when I talk about it, it is less painful, less hurtful, and I've processed the emotions instead of going to bed without anything happening through that day, where I can make from one small thing, make it so much bigger.
I want to add to this for anyone listening in, and that is one of the things that we don't get taught, typically, most of us, is emotional self-regulation. There is, if you Google on it, the emotional wheel, you'll see just how many emotions that we have and we are capable of and we will express, but we can't name them. Our emotional literacy is really poor. Brené Brown did some research into this. They were university students, I believe, and it was quite a large number. And she had estimated that they would be able to name she theorized they would be able to name no more than 7 emotions. Mm-hmm. All right. And the results were that they, on average, could name 3 emotions. And they all boiled down to a version of mad, sad, or glad. All right. And so, yeah, we do need. Did you just quickly get? Oh, okay, this is a different one.
Of course. This is a different one, but it is similar to what is possible.
Yeah. And so we really need to work on understanding our emotions better, being able to name an emotion. So when somebody triggers you into a certain emotion or feeling, that you can actually put a name to it. I think it was possibly Daniel Kahn. I might be misquoting, but name it to tame it was the quote. All right. Because being able to name the emotion, having your brain engaged to say, right now I'm feeling this X, Y, Z. It takes some of the significance out of that emotion immediately.
Definitely. Right?
Because then you, instead of letting it hijack you, but you know, I'm just absolutely furious at this, because then you're going to start to process why, what happened, what was the trigger that created this strong emotion in you, and so, you know, I think this is one other area that anyone listening in, start diving in, start recording on a daily basis what emotions you felt. And awe and joy and happiness as well. Let's not forget, those kinds of emotions and feelings, but also the ones that we need, because they're signals that something is not right in our world. All right. Yeah. I call them either feel good emotions or not so feel good emotions. They're not positive or negative. I try to take that language away from emotions, because we need them all. An emotion,
right? We need them to have that balance amongst within ourselves as well. So I definitely get it.
Yeah, and so going back to the global and European data that you just had on the screen, you know, the feelings and you know, sadness and loneliness, etc. These are things that we possibly could have or could be within our locus of control. But we need the tips and tools to explore them.
Yeah.
And have them become part of our DNA.
Yes, definitely. Right. And I also believe that there is an element that is often underestimated, right? We know anger, we know in a way stress and sadness, but loneliness, you might think that even though your office has like 50 people in a workplace or in one space, that people shouldn't be feeling lonely. But if people are unconsciously excluding each other or are deliberately excluding themselves from that equation, right? So I remember in certain occasions when it's very busy, I sometimes exclude myself and sit in a quiet, you know, space.
I isolate myself
because I want to focus on work, right? So there are moments that it might connect with loneliness, and it might connect with you not being able to connect with your team or not being able to connect with the company, right? So don't underestimate loneliness, because loneliness can trigger all these other different emotions as well, like stress, sadness, and anger, and it's connected to that as well. So don't underestimate that.
Yeah, and we're seeing it progressively more not just in the workplace, but in people's personal lives. So
people learned a hard lesson through the lockdown, where they have friends and family. I mean, I was lucky that I have my network. I have Let's Humanize the Workplace, but I also have the summit that I already had a lot of interactions. But I can also imagine that if I didn't have those interactions and I would only be depending on family or my partner and my child, my world will be very small if mm-hmm. I only had that. So I can understand, you know, people, their perspective as well. And I hope that they get the understanding at work as well, or they get the understanding from their leaders, or the leaders get the understanding so that they can better lead as well.
And I, you know, thinking on this topic of loneliness, I would, mm-hmm. I don't think Gallup does it, but to be able to see what the figures are for just on the binary scale, men versus women, mm-hmm. because I know that the data
is up.
That do they have it? That men, mm-hmm. that men and boys experience much greater degrees of loneliness. They have higher suicidal rates as well. And again, this is probably part of the conditioning, the stereotypical conditioning that we place on men and women. But for men, you know, not being able to express their emotions, mm-hmm. not being able to confide, you know, in somebody that they're experiencing X, Y, Z. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see what that data is. I know, I see by your eyes that you're probably trying to look for it.
I have it, no, I already have it, but I need to upload it on the screen as well so that I can, let me see, that I can share it, but I already have it. It's an interesting perspective to show. Let me see if I can present my whole screen. Can you see it?
Yeah.
So this is the daily loneliness, and I will make it a little bit bigger. So they say 90% of the women experience loneliness and 24% of the men experience loneliness. And when you divide it, you will also see 25% below 35, right? And 20% above 35 years old okay. is experiencing loneliness as well.
Yeah. Okay. Great stats. Yeah. You dove deeper into the data than I did, Vivian. Mm-hmm.
But you asked, and I was just like, I know that the data is there, so it's already in the report. So why not bring it up? I haven't made it beautified it with my color, but this is what I can do.
And okay.
also know that those who are working remotely feel more excluded from their team members, right? So this goes into show like what kinds of tools, team building activities do you have in place to keep people connected with each other?
Yeah. I mean, that's more than one-fourth of your employee base. And this is just the loneliness, so
This is just the loneliness. Yes, I only brought up the loneliness.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I think we could wrap up on that note.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. I wanted to say, I don't know who this is. LinkedIn is not showing mm-hmm. it, but I'll definitely look it up on LinkedIn. Thank you for listening to us or for watching this. And I'm also curious, like, if there are any topics that you want us to address with the Go to Thrive theme, right? Let us know so that we can address it next month. But thank you for listening, Tim. Thank you for watching. If you're watching the replay, also let us know what your thoughts are on this particular topic, because it's we need to have more conversations about this. And I know that the world is rapidly evolving, especially with AI being at the corner, maybe being the threat or value for effectiveness. What are you doing to still maintain and boost and amplify your resilience, your well-being as well? That's what I wanted to end it with.
And one last thing, because you said something and I thought you were going to go in a different direction. The world is evolving. Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
So my feelings is that in many ways it's devolving, and really need to put a focus on the thriving
in the workplace.
thriving. Yes.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Vivian.
Also, Thank you, Goste. I hope that I'm pronouncing your name right. If not, please let us know and know that LinkedIn has an option that you can pronounce your name. So Google LinkedIn name pronunciation or have a look at my LinkedIn where you can see a speech volume next to my name. When you click on that, you'll know how to pronounce my name right. So let us know. And if you're not activating the name pronunciation, then know that you can Google the LinkedIn name pronunciation so you have that. Ooh, another comment. Thank you, Kyra. Evolving and devolving. Yes. Yes. Thank you for sharing that with
Unfortunately, yeah, thank you for sharing. Yeah,
Thank you. I would say, oh, now everybody's coming up with all these comments. Thank you.
yeah,
Thank you,
you're
Annabelle.
welcome, Annabella. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's a surprise when people show up. So thank you very
yeah,
much for this
yeah.
conversation.
Thank
And
you too,
like I
Vivian.
said, looking forward to next time.
Yeah,
Bye, everybody. Until
absolutely.
next
Bye,
time.
everyone.